Reggae Uprising with your host, Denise.
Greetings, Reggae Uprising podcast family, and welcome to another episode. Now, if you are fresh and new to Reggae Uprising podcast, it is all about connecting people of the African diaspora through wisdom, overstanding, inspirational stories, all backed by the soundtrack of sweet reggae music. So each and every Wednesday, we feature a new guest who shares their journey, their inspirations, their works alongside seven reggae selections. Now, what this is doing is building up a catalogue, building up a unity, a family of brothers and sisters that you can interact with, that you can connect with and collaborate with your own works through hearing their stories. Reggae Uprising podcast now has well over 120 episodes, so there are plenty of brothers and sisters for you to connect with. There is so much wisdom within all of those episodes, but as well as our interviews, so we delve deep within our interviews. We also have some special editions as part of those episodes. So we've had so many special features, special editions, whether that be talking about specific parts of our history, whether that be focusing on certain brothers and sisters that have done certain works throughout our history, whether that be certain things that are going on in the world at the time that you as brothers and sisters have asked for us to focus on. There is so much of a wealth of knowledge within these episodes, and each one within their own right, that you just can't miss out on any of them. You really, really can't. And I just want to take a moment to give thanks to all of the brothers and sisters that have shown their support through sharing these works, through connecting more brothers and sisters with these works, for all of your beautiful comments, and of course, every single brother and sister that is featured within these works. Thank you so, so much for taking your time to tell your story live and direct from yourselves and empowering future brothers and sisters in their works as well. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to Reggae Uprising podcast wherever you are listening to it. You can also subscribe via my website, which is daniel.co.uk. So that is daniel.co.uk. And if you subscribe there, not only will you get updates on the latest Reggae Uprising podcast episodes, you will also get updates on my performances and my future releases. Because as well as being the host of Reggae Uprising podcast, I am also a singer-songwriter, a host, and a businesswoman. So if you want to find out more about the works that I do, how you can connect with me, and also, like I said, check out my musical works as well. There are music videos of official releases. There's all original works there. You can find out when my up and coming gig dates are, so you can check me out. There's also a contact page as well. So if you are holding an event or a festival, or like I said, if you would like to collaborate in some specific works as well, you can get in touch with me via the contact page on daniel.co.uk. The link should also be in this description wherever you are listening to this episode. And on the homepage, you can also find all of my social media links there as well. So throughout Reggae Uprising podcast's lifetime, we have featured brothers and sisters from all over the world with a vast array of different works. But we decided for the summer that we were going to focus on music. So we've been focusing all throughout the summer on music artists and uplifting and promoting their works. So this episode right here is the final of this series of focusing on musical works all over the world. But don't worry, I know you've all been enjoying this a lot. So we are going to be featuring musical works again. It's not gone. No, we have some more. Don't worry about that. But we're going to make way for some new works for next month. So just to let you know, this is the final of these musical works. But don't worry, we're always going to feature artists. Of course. This is Reggae Uprising podcast. Come on. So we're going to have a little bit less talking from me, and it's about time to get into some music right now. So we're going to get into this week's guest's first selection, which is Bob Marley, Buffalo Soldier. Like to welcome this week's guest, Satin Beige. Greetings and welcome.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Now, before we get started with your interview, can you tell us why you chose that first selection that we just heard?
Yeah, so Buffalo Soldier. I just remember this from being a child, and I have a memory of my dad playing it in the car. Probably both of my parents did, but I just remember my dad playing it in the car. But it wasn't until I got much older, singing along to the lyrics, I'm like, wait, this isn't like a happy little song. You know, like when you're a kid and you're listening, you're not thinking about the lyrics. So it just took on a whole new like meaning and new life for me. So that's why I picked that one, because it just really made an impact on me as just a person and also as a musician about how powerful lyrics can be and how you can communicate with people through music and then not even realize sometimes the message until later on. So that's why I picked that one for my first selection.
So as with all the guests here at Reggae Uprising podcast, we always ask them about their heritage. Now, you touched a little bit on your dad there, but can you tell us more about your heritage, please?
Yeah, of course. It's a complicated story, but I feel like it is for most people. So my mum's parents, her dad was Guyanese and her mum was Bajan from Barbados. But on her dad's side there, we think there's some Native American in there. So there's that as well. And then on my dad's side, he's mixed Jewish heritage and like Irish Catholic heritage. Both of them were born in the UK, but there's a big mix of things there, and that makes me.
So having such a melting pot of different cultures, how do you think that's impacted you growing up? Like, can you tell us little nuggets of information, little wisdoms that have been passed on to you from those cultures?
It's kind of hard, you know, because when it's your life, you don't think of it as being anything particularly different or special. But I think maybe it's made me feel be more open to other cultures outside of the ones that I know. Because my parents were divorced like when I was about 7 or 8. So my mum raised me, basically. So a lot of the food that we were eating and the music we were listening to, we listened to a lot of soca. So we're hearing all that. So I had all of that. And then obviously, like, my dad was more like traditional English. So I always felt like very like mixed and very open to other cultures, other ideas. So I think that's probably the main thing. And not feeling categorized. Like, I never felt like I had to be defined by anything, because there's nothing that's gone before, you know, there's no precedent that's been set. So it just allowed me a lot of freedom to be what I wanted to be, listen to what I wanted to listen to, be exposed to a lot of different music, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different food, and not feel like I have to be one thing or another. So that's kind of the main thing.
So can you tell us about, you touched on there about your parents, but could you tell us a little bit more, like, what were the works that they did? How did they come to be together? Can you tell us that little love story?
I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think it was that my mum, she loves playing squash. my dad was a really good squash player and they were working at the same place. So I think it probably was something to do with that. I never really asked the full story, but I think it's through love of sport, basically.
Okay. And in terms of the different cultures, what would you say food-wise, if you could pick a dish from each of those cultures as your favourite, what would they be?
I don't know. That is so hard. I don't know. You know, Bajans love chicken. I don't eat meat anymore. That's the thing. But when I did eat meat, oh my gosh, chicken was just my favourite. Any kind of chicken. But, you know, just some nice spices on it, with a bit of rice and peas. That was my favourite thing to eat. But, you know, they're also fish. They love fish, flying fish. My mum used to do tilapia, which is amazing. Cuckoo and okra. I can't pick a favourite. I just like food. That's such a hard question. My dad's not really a chef, so nothing really coming through from that side. Just, you know, like roast potatoes and chicken and that kind of thing, but nothing exciting. But on my mum's side, yeah, the fish, I would say, like the tilapia. I have fond memories of the tilapia she would do.
So you don't have a favourite Irish dish to counterbalance?
No, because like that's kind of quite a way back. So for me, like, because I only went to Ireland recently, and it's one of my favourite places. I went to Dublin. But I don't, that's like a culture that I'm learning now. So I don't really know that much about it. So that's kind of a thing I'm exploring at the moment.
I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but I feel like the question needs to be asked now. Like, what sparked this this interest now for you to go to Ireland?
Well, I just got an invitation to go and play in their National Theatre. And I was umming and ahhing about it. And I just thought, what? I'm crazy. Of course I'm going to do it. And I went over and I just fell in love with the country and the people. And I felt like I was home. And so that's why. Now I keep going back. I just want to learn more about the place and more about the history of it. And it's interesting because, you know, like the Caribbean islands, they were colonized, and it's a lot of parallels with Ireland. Like there's a lot of similarities in the people, even like some of the phrases that I'm hearing them say, I recognize it. My mom's saying, I'm like, what? Because they were in the Caribbean as well. So it's just a whole discovery for me. You put me on the spot now. I can't think of any off the top of my head. I wish I'd have thought about this before. But sometimes when they're saying things, I'm like, yeah, like I can imagine my grandma saying, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but there's just little phrases that they say that are just, I'm just like, just put that in a Bajan accent. I can just hear my grandmother say.
So in terms of the other countries, have you been to the other countries that are part of your heritage as well as Ireland?
No, I've been to Barbados, but I haven't been to Guyana. I haven't been to, so my granddad's, if you traced it back, I think it's Lithuania, which I haven't been to either. I don't know any, I think they speak Russian or something close to it. I don't really know any of that language. I haven't been there. I've listened to like because my sister's a violinist, so some of the classical music from there. I've heard like little bits of it, but I haven't done much exploring of that. So no, it's just Barbados. Just Barbados, the only place that I've been from the countries that like I've descended from. But I hope to change that. It's just it's finding the time to do it, and you know, just knowing where to start, because it can be quite intimidating to just go into something that you don't really have a starting point for. So it's hard. And also, like, my granddad on my dad's side, he's not alive anymore, so I can't ask him about this, and it's difficult to find out about those roots because of being Jewish, and some of the stuff is Yiddish, some of it's in Russian. It's really hard. And same on my dad's side. My mom's side, her dad was like kind of a bit of an elusive character, so it's kind of hard to trace back that lineage. I mean, I think my sister will probably be in this. She's really into this stuff, but it's trickier. The easiest routes to find are in Barbados.
Because that is quite a difficult thing, as you know, as we are people of the African diaspora, trying to find that lineage, trying to trace back. How have you acquired so much knowledge of your lineage?
This is from my mum and my sister. My dad as well is quite interested in it, so they kind of report back. I mean, in Barbados, because it's such a small island, that a lot of it is just from people that are alive now can remember back, and just through talking to people, you can find stuff out. But it's harder when you're not speaking the same language as someone to do that. So, like, on the Jewish side, it's a lot trickier. Like, my dad has spent ages researching it and hit loads of dead ends, and it's still not completely clear picture, but I think he's getting there.
Speaking of lineage, do you have any knowledge of your grandparents, any kind of memories that stick in your mind, any stories, any things that they used to say?
It's hard. Like, I have more memories of my grandparents on my dad's side because we live closer to where they are, and also my mum's mum died quite young. So I remember her, but I can't really, it's not clear. And I think my cousin, who's older, he has more memories. So I think some of the memories that I think I have are actually his, that he's told me of. But, you know, my mom talks about her parents quite a lot and the stories that they told her. So I feel like that's where I feel connected to them from, that, rather than my own memories. On my dad's side, I just know my dad's dad. He was really enthusiastic about music, and probably a lot of like why the music that I listen to now, like the jazz and all of that, that I am quite influenced by, that was from my dad's parents because they were big jazz fans. My grandma's still alive. She still is a big jazz fan. So I was hearing a lot of that. I don't know if I would have listened to quite so much of it if I hadn't have been there. I remember one of my first concerts that I remember was them taking me, when I was probably really too small to be going, to like a little town hall listening to some like crazy jazz band playing. So those are probably my earliest memories from that side.
And before we go into your next selection, I've got to take it back to food just for a moment. Yeah. Because you've had so many different influences food-wise, culture-wise, do you have your own signature dish that you've acquired? Like, if there's a family party or a get-together that somebody's like, you know what, I need you to bring this dish. You cook that so good. Like, what is your signature dish?
Oh, man, this is hard. Well, because at the moment, I'm cooking like for the week for my brother. And I just do like rice and peas, some okra, some plantain, some chicken. But I will say, I think probably my signature dish was my mum's old signature dish, which is curried turkey. She'd do like a turkey curry, and it was incredible. She used to, every New Year's Eve, everyone would be talking about it. So I think if I was doing a party, I'd just do that because I know everyone loves it, and she knows how to do it perfectly. So I think I know how to do it now, but if I needed just a little extra je ne sais quoi, I'd just call her because that's her. That's the thing that everyone used to rave about. They used to come over with her turkey curry.
Okay. We're going to move on to your next selection, which is Good Thing Going by Sugar Miner. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us why you chose this selection, please?
Oh, man, this tune. Me and my brother used to love this. My dad played it in a car. He used to make these like little mixtapes to play in the car. And this was on one of them. And we used to love it. We used to like rinse it, just play it over and over and over and over. So I had to include it because it's just a tune.
We've got to dedicate this to your dad then, yeah?
Yeah.
Here we go with Good Thing Going, Sugar Miner.
Temperature by 3 degrees.
you give us more of an insight into your mother's works? As you said that you grew up more with your mother, and she obviously must have had a great influence on you. So tell us a little bit more about her, her works, and how it influenced you in your choices in life.
Yeah, of course. So my mum would be a first generation British. Both her parents are immigrants. Windrush generation, technically, but at the very end of that. She's actually from Leicester, but if you heard her speak, you wouldn't know it. And she was telling me that when she was a child, she used to speak like how her parents speak. And they would say, no, don't speak like that. Speak like you're English, so speak like an English person. So because they always had Radio 4 on, she just copied that, because she was like, okay, I was trying to speak like an English person. So when you hear her, you just think, what? How are you from Leicester? You don't sound like that. You don't sound like a Radio 4 presenter. But she really liked math, which is, I don't understand personally, but she really liked math. So she excelled at that and went to uni and studied that, and then went into computing in the 80s, which is a good time to be in computing. Moved down to the south of England, just outside of London, which is how she met my dad, because they ended up working in the same place. And now she's self-employed, just like teaching maths and just having a good time generally, because she's in control of her own life and could do what she wants to do, basically. So yeah, she did well for herself. But yeah, so I grew up with her, my brother and my sister. So I would say, like, the main influence from her parents that I felt was probably the food. Like, my mum's was one of those people where she's always talking about, oh, it's a bit fresh, you know, when you haven't put enough salt, enough seasoning on. She's always talking about English food is too fresh. So, yeah, that's my mum.
Yeah, I have two questions from what you just said. So yeah. What accent do you get when you're in trouble? That's how you know somebody's real accent,
oh,
yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So you get a little bit of...
Go on.
See, I can't work out. I don't really know. I don't know if it's Guyanese or Bajan or like a hybrid thing. She's in front of me now, so I'm waiting for her to turn around and be like, I don't do that. but yeah, when she's really angry, yeah, that's when it comes out, the little phrases and the little... You best take care, you know.
Okay.
You want to sleep. You're too hard ears.
And
all
the...
this... You want licks.
Oh, some licks, yeah. I don't want to get you in trouble right now. You might get some now.
I'll be getting some licks later.
And the second question I wanted to ask was mathematics. So did she convert you to the world of mathematics, or because it's like, it's one of them ones, isn't it? Like you absolutely loved it because she loved it, or you hated it because she loved it so much. Which one was it?
I wasn't a big fan, but it was useful, to be honest, because some of my teachers at school were not great. And so I would just be like, Mom, how do I do this? So it was useful for that. I don't really think I'm a natural mathematician, but I can do it. I think if I didn't have my mom as my mom, then I think I'd just detest maths. So I'm not a fan, but I can, it's fine. It's all right. I can deal with it.
And what from your mom would you like to pass on to your own children? Whether it's a mentality, whether it's a way of being, you know, what is it that you, from your mom, that you love about so much? You're like, I hope I embody that, and I hope that I can pass that on to my children.
My mom's very independent. She's very, like, strong. She doesn't really... She can look after herself. And that's... And I mean, like, completely. Like, she doesn't need anyone. So I think to see that, like, as a woman, especially as, like, a black woman in a world which sometimes is, well, a country and a world that sometimes it's not the easiest to be not white in. But it hasn't fazed her. Like, it just doesn't, it's not an issue to her at all. And I didn't realize how lucky I was to see that until I was up in Liverpool and talking to some people about that they felt like, because they were black and, like, because they were black women, that it's, the world is harder and that they can't do things. And I've never felt that. Like, I always saw black women as strong and overachievers, and because of my mom and because of the friends that she had. So it was never in my head that that was a barrier to anything. So when I have kids, I would hope that I would be able to show them the same thing, that being a woman, being not white, it's not, doesn't stop you from doing anything. Like, if you put your mind to doing something, you can do it, basically.
We're going to move on to your next selection, which is Skankin' Sweet by Chronix. Mm-hmm. Why did you pick this selection?
It just speaks to me. I can't even remember the first time I heard this. I think it might have been in the lockdown. And I just thought, yeah, this is just, it's just, the lyrics just, they're just spot on. And it just feels good. It's like it's got a good groove. He's got an incredible voice. They're just a great band. But they just not, it's not just that song. All of them, they're really saying something. And it just resonated. And I just think it's such a, it's such a jam. But it's also like, you can listen to it when you're happy. You can listen to it, you're sad, angry, whatever. And it just kind of calms your spirit, gives you a bit of perspective. So that's why I threw this one in.
Here we go with Chronix, Skankin' Sweet.
Skankin', grooving, hallelujah. The pressures of your life and it tough. Now stay down, mama, time pick it up. Now bother with the down, full style, strictly up, full vibes. Now pick it up when the bills, them, the rent and the mortgage due. Yeah. When me chalice, when your best friends are gone and it's only you. Yeah. Light up a split, turn up the music.
Skankin' Sweet, everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and the rap. I feel a reggae music sweet, yeah, yeah. Skankin' Sweet, everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and the rock with me. You know, feel a reggae music sweet, yeah, yeah. Skankin' Sweet, for every pain there's a melody, yeah. For every trouble there's a harmony that brings everything together. So make we sing together. And who said life no hard? And every man got this struggle. I beg you to help me, Lord, and let me overcome my struggle. Skankin' Sweet, yeah. Everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and the rock with me. You know, feel a reggae music sweet, yeah, yeah. Skankin' Sweet. Everybody wanna feel like free.
Now we touched on just before your last selection about your mother and her experiences as a black woman, or how she influenced you as a black woman. Can you tell us more of your own experiences of being mixed heritage? What was it like for you in school? What was it like for you socially? What were your experiences as a mixed heritage woman?
Yeah, so I was used to being like sometimes the only white person in my class, definitely the only person you call mixed or black, all the way through school up to 18. Even when I went to university, I think I was two other black people in my class. Everyone else was white. So that's not uncomfortable for me because I'm very used to that. It actually wasn't until I did my postgrad that I started to be around more people that were mixed or black or even like Asian, Chinese. It was always a white dominated environment. So I never really saw this as a issue, and I think a lot of this is because my mom never made it seem like an issue. So I look back and there was some instance in primary school very early on where a girl was saying, I can't play because of the color of my skin. And I didn't even like register this could be racism, that it was bullying, anything. I was just like, okay, I guess that must be the case then, because it was just not in my head for this to even be a thing. I was like, no, I'm really privileged that was the mentality I had and that it didn't make an issue for me. But just generally, I don't know if it's just that I don't see it or if it's just because of being in the south of England, which is a lot more mixed anyway, that it hasn't been a massive issue. And when I've come up against racism, it's always like old men, and I always just think, hey, you're going to die soon anyway, so I'm not really worried about it, but it hasn't stopped me from doing anything. Of course, there's the racism that you don't know about, where people will be prejudiced against you and you will never know. You just won't get an opportunity because of the colour of your skin and you'll just never know about it. But it's not like a sticking point for me. I'm just like, okay, next one, next one, next one. But a lot of that is to do with my mum, but my mum never making it seem like an issue. And her thing was just, if you work hard and you're the best, then no one can deny that. So if I don't get something, I'm just like, I just need to work harder. So I just need to be better. But I know that's such a privileged position to come from and to be that way. And I probably credit to the schools I was in that they kind of nipped those things in the bud, because it could have been really different, you know, because I would have just definitely always the minority, but it was just never an issue because when you're a child, you don't really think about these things unless people tell you, you know. So I've been really lucky in that sense.
As somebody of mixed heritage, are there any terminologies, any words that you feel affronted by that you really don't like?
I don't like half caste. I don't think people use it in a way for it to be an insult, but I just don't like it because caste, like the where that comes from is just horrible. And it's also like, I'm not half, where am I half? You know, it's like half a person or half something. It's like, I'm not a half, I'm a full thing. So I never really liked that phrase. What I find kind of difficult sometimes is I identify as a mixed race, and it's not because I don't want to be black, but it's because I've seen what, because on my mum's side, like my cousin, he is black, he's got a black mum and a black dad, and what he has to deal with and what he has to put up with is different than what I have, because sometimes people can't tell what my mix is and think I'm Latina or something. I've had like weird racism that's nothing to do with anywhere I come from, and it's so it just doesn't hurt the same way. I don't have the same racism as if I was like obviously just black. So what I find tricky sometimes is when I'm talking to people and I'm like, they're calling me black, and I'm like, okay, I'm thinking that's not really how I think of myself. But if you say that, people are like, oh, what, you don't like black people, you don't want to be black? I'm like, it's not that. It's just it feels like I'm trying to claim something and that I don't fully understand, like I don't have to deal with all the struggles of that, and it just feels wrong for me to claim that. I don't know how well that's come across, but I've been trying to put this into a phrase for so long, because it's a hard thing to explain. I think it's not just me, I think quite a lot of mixed people feel the same way, where it's like you're not white, you feel more like black than white, but claiming blackness feels like you're somehow cheating or you're pretending or you're denying the other whatever you're mixed with, you know. So that's kind of a tricky one there.
So how do you see yourself then?
I just call myself mixed race because it's like I mean how much time have you got for me to go through my heritage, you know, when someone asks me. And it's kind of like, if you want to know, I will tell you, but if we just need to just do the headline, we'll just call it mixed race. So all you need to know is that I'm not white and I'm a mixture of things. And none of those things are more important than the other. Like, I value all of them equally. So I know that in terms of a culture, a Caribbean culture has probably had the most influence on my life. As English culture and like Caribbean culture, those have the most influences on my life. But that doesn't take away from my Jewish heritage, that doesn't take away from my Irish heritage. Like, just because I don't know those cultures as well, that doesn't mean that I'm not from those people, you know. So that's why I just say mixed, because I'm like, it's too hard to say, and I kind of just think putting labels on things, it's not always helpful. In the end of the day, we're kind of probably all mixed, you know. It's just we don't know what our lineage is always.
We're going to move on to your next selection, which is Source by Nubia Garcia. Can you tell us why you chose this selection, please?
Nubia, she's such an interesting artist. So she's, in this piece, she's mixing kind of jazz, dub, reggae. And I'm all about that. Like, a lot of what I'm doing is taking a traditional instrument in my own music, like a classical instrument, and making it be like jazz or pop or soul or R&B. So what she's doing to me as a saxophonist, that's really interesting, and like mixing different musics and different ideas, and I just basically I just wanted more people to hear it, so I just picked it.
Here we go with Sauce, Nubia Garcia. About your school days in general, the subjects that you liked, enjoyed at school, and why and how and where you went after school.
School. Yeah, it's kind of a mixed one. So I was probably an irritating student to have. I was one of those ones that never had the right books and was always late, and one of those. I wasn't naughty, like I didn't talk in class or anything like that, but I almost never had the right books. I didn't have the right textbooks, I didn't have a pen to write with. I was just kind of a bit of a scatterbrain. But I just liked learning. When it came to doing my A-levels, I ended up doing physics, chemistry, English and music, which is a bit of an odd combination. But I think in the back of my head, I was thinking I wanted to keep my options open. And because everyone expected me to do music, and I was kind of sort of rebelling, like, I don't have to just do music. I can do other things as well. In the end, I went to uni and I did music. So
you gave into it. You couldn't hold it in.
But I think it was definitely useful for me to kind of do a broad range of subjects, because when I left uni, trying to be a musician is hard. So when I left uni, for a while I was teaching, like, I was able to teach like chemistry and physics and even like maths because of the level I'd done it to, which was never my intention at all. But they're like subjects that people always can't understand. So I was like, yeah, I'm glad I did that, because it just helps me to like make a bit of money while I'm trying to find my feet as a musician. And yeah, so I liked science, I liked English, psychology, music, but really, like, I was a bit of a daydream. I was always writing stories and poems and songs and drawing and reading comic books and one of those. That's probably why I always didn't have the right books, because my head was just in the clouds.
So you mentioned there that you did a little bit of teaching there. Can you give us an insight into a typical class, or give us a little bit of a bit of chemistry knowledge for our listeners?
So I was teaching one-to-one. So first I was just doing like private students. So I just kind of advertised online and got some private students in. And then I was actually teaching children that looked after children, which was probably more rewarding. So there were like children that weren't in the mainstream education system, either because they refused to go to school or because they were just in care and they were just really behind, or for whatever reason. So you had to like go and find a way in, because a lot of them, they just didn't want to workers had a really bad experience at school. And I think maybe because I was in trouble at school a lot from not having books, I was kind of like, I can understand why you don't want to go into class. Like, I understand why you just have a negative feeling towards learning anything. But then to be able to kind of just see them grow in life, see the excitement in learning things and being able to do things that you never thought you were able to do, that was really rewarding. So I was, just before the pandemic, actually, I was doing that. But chemistry, what I will say is the thing I always used to say, like, if I had A-level or GCSE chemistry students, the main thing that I always said to them was carbon has four bonds. And if anyone has done chemistry, they'll know what I'm going on about. And if they don't, they're just going to be like, what are you talking about? But carbon has four bonds. That was like, for any GCSE students, if you've got any GCSE students that are listening, that's what you need to remember. If you're doing organic chemistry, there's always four bonds for carbon. If you haven't got four bonds, you've done something wrong.
You're going to have to explain that to our listeners, because some of them will be like you said, what? What is she talking about? You have to now.
It's, God, I don't want to bore you, but in organic chemistry, you can actually draw out different compounds, and different elements will have different number of bonds they can make to different elements. And carbon is like the basis of all life. So it's the one that's going to come up the most often. In organic chemistry, there will always be a carbon there. So when you draw it, there will always be four bonds. So it will be bonded to four other things. But sometimes people will just forget that. So they'll have like three or five. If you've got three or five or two or one, you've got it wrong. Like, go back and check. You've missed something somewhere, basically. But that's like, people just lose so many points, literally just not counting how many bonds they've put on their carbon. So that was my little catchphrase I always used to say to my students. Carbon has four bonds. Just remember that. If you remember nothing else, carbon has four bonds.
Because it is the foundation of all organic matter. Beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. Wow. Wow. That was not boring at all. No, it's great. We love knowledge. Yes. We're going to move on to your next selection, which is If You Only Knew by Savannah. Why did you choose this one?
Oh, I just love this song. She's got such an incredible voice. And I listen to her all the time. And I really like this song because it's got like, it's reggae. It's kind of got this sort of R&B, kind of almost like old school soul, something about the chord progression. And it's just really, really nice. And it's like what she's singing about and the melody, like it's got this kind of sort of melancholy thing to it. But it's like the way that when that happens in reggae, so it's kind of like, I don't know, you can't do it with any other kind of music. It's kind of this, it's kind of subtle. But you feel it. It's like, it's got soul to it, but like a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? I can't really explain it any other way. Like, but it's just so nice. I just think she's so talented. And I would just love all people to be listening to her. She's an incredible artist.
Here we go with If You Only Knew by Savannah.
Something special about this time. Like we hit a vital story. I see a light shine. You're a real one, the gentle kind. You're not perfect, Lord knows you have some secrets I. But I will keep them since it's been a while that I see you making effort to show me.
Right at the start about your grandparents' love for jazz music. You gave us a little bit of an insight into your dad loving Good Thing Going by Sugar Mine. But can you tell us, you know, a couple of the artists that your parents used to love listening to when you were growing up?
Mm. Oh, it's so varied. So, like, on my mum's side, a lot of what she was listening to was, like, 80s, like, disco and soul. And then even into 90s. So, like, the latest stuff would have been, like, TLC and Destiny's Child. And the earlier stuff would have been, like, Chaka Khan and George Benson and all of that good stuff. So a lot of that, like, that's just in my blood, a lot of that. My dad, oh, gosh, he just loves music, so he would sort of listen to everything. So I can't even think, I don't even, couldn't even tell you what his favourite artist, probably his favourite artist is the Beatles, which is so generic, but he listens to everything. So a lot of what I was listening to, well, a lot of what I've discovered was from my dad, just like, so like, that's a good thing going, that was from my dad, not my mom. My mom knows the track, because when I was picking the selections, she was just like, oh, yeah. But I was like, I've never heard her play that track. She's saying, like, it's one of my favourite tracks. Never heard her play that. It was from my dad that I heard that. And my dad likes, oh, gosh, he likes this. He really like? He likes John Batiste. He's a kind of, what do you call it? He's a piano player. It's kind of like Motown-y kind of stuff. He likes all sorts. I mean, I would just be here forever if I tried to go through it for my dad. Like, he likes Oasis. He likes this band called, what are they called? Like, a lot of the African choral stuff, just voices. He likes all that. I'm trying to think of the one he was talking about the other day. I can't think who they are, from a South African group. So he listens to all sorts of stuff. My dad's just like, he'll say, oh, I don't really like music that much, but he does. He's just listening to something different all the time. It's just a treasure trove.
So you did mention earlier as well that your sister plays the violin as well. So yeah. Where did the musical spark come from? Is that something that your parents initiated, or did you both, you know, say that you wanted to play certain instruments? How did that all start for you both?
I think that my dad plays a bit of piano and he plays trombone. And that was from his dad. So his dad's a really, really incredible jazz pianist. So like him and his brothers, they all play instruments. And I think my mom just saw my dad being able to play piano. And she was like, oh, wow, that's so amazing. Like, what an amazing gift to be able to do that. So that if we have children, then I would like them to be able to play an instrument. So I actually started on piano, which I can't play at all now. But I think I was quite a quiet, quite reserved child, and I just came alive in music class. So when I was in primary school, my music teacher noticed this, and they had this little cello, and she said, oh, maybe Saturn would like to play this. I think my mom said she asked me if I wanted to play the cello. I would have been about 5. I wouldn't have known what it was, but I was just the kind of child that would just go, okay, yeah. So that's how I started playing. And my sister, because she's younger, she saw me playing the cello and like going to orchestra and like little baby orchestra, and she saw the violins there. And she was like, oh, I want to play cello. But she was doing the like actions of violin. So my mom was trying to get her to play cello, because we had my old little baby cello. But she was very insistent, like, no, no, this thing. And it was a violin. So that's how she came to be playing that.
So how old were you when you actually started playing the cello?
I was 5, I think, when I started.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you believe in what people say about teaching children, whether it be languages or different instruments, before the age of 7? Do you feel like it went in so much easier with you because you were so young?
I think it's like, all the children are different. There's some kids that they will just not sit and do it. But they might be good at something else. Like they might be good at dancing or gymnastics or running or football or whatever. Like people, I really think everyone's has the potential to be like a genius or an expert at something. It's just that sometimes we don't find what that thing is until really late on in life. And some people just never find it. But it's hard, you know, because it's, you know, how do you know what a child is going to excel at? They might be an incredible actor. They might be an incredible scientist, you just don't know. And I think it was just lucky that my music teacher could see that in me, that there was something. Because I think if I had just been playing piano, I don't know if I would still be doing it now, but I don't play it now. So I probably just wouldn't have never have continued on the path of being a musician if I'd just been playing piano. Maybe, I don't know. But it was just luck that someone saw that and that there was a cello there. Because I can't think of any other circumstances which I'd have played a cello. I don't think my mum even knew what a cello was back then. So it's just luck. But I do think that, like, it's surprising what children can learn. Like when they want to do something, they'll do it. So if you can find the thing that they just latch onto, you'll be surprised at how quick and how much they can learn and how much concentration they can have something. A lot of time it's just that it's not, you haven't found the thing that kind of excites them yet.
We're going to squeeze in another one of your selections, which is Good Over Evil by Jazz Elise. Why did you choose this selection?
Again, just another incredible current reggae artist. And it's just quite uplifting. It's a more kind of traditional than the last track, which I like. But it just feels good. It's another one, that one and the Chronics track. They're just ones when I need a little bit of a boost, I'll put them on. It kind of speaks to my soul. So I just wanted to share it.
Here we go with Good Over Evil, Jazz Elise.
Almighty God, I am so grateful for the blessings you bestowed. Thinking about the past and all the things me never know. Now all the rent paid, bills paid, nothing in the hole. I'm living the dream and going hard towards the goals. I turn my pain into my muscle, fuel the hustle with my struggle. I remember the naysayers, never believed me could have been known. But to Jah bless, no man curse. Cut and clear a pattern, won't put in the work. But I'm never walking on your shoes. I'm grateful for this journey. All but the energy moves. It's good over evil. Never fail me. Yeah. Yeah, my stumble knees, them buckle back my toe. I'm a member when we couldn't book a show. Above you, tell a massive that some will grow. How you give me the strength, some knowledge. Carry on life's journey, keep the ball rolling. The act of the buckle that keeps I'm 91 close to me. Me and Phoebe.
Can you tell us more of the evolution of coming into the world of music at the age of 5, how that evolved from then playing into orchestras and then leaving school and becoming an artist? How did that all develop?
Well, I think I was just kind of lucky that I just took to cello for some reason. And then I had a really, really good teacher who, she just saw something in me, I think, and she really pushed me. Then when I got to senior school, and this is like the traditional story that a million like people who have played instruments will say, is like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like for me, it was just, I was exhausted. I was going to senior school, was like 30 miles away from where I lived. So it was like a long, it was like an hour and a half bus journey, longer when there was traffic. I was tired, I would come home, and my mum was teaching in the evening sometimes, so I'd be like cooking, she'd like done half the food, but then I got to finish it off with my brother, and I was just tired, and she was basically like saying, I don't have money to waste, so if you're not going to practice, I'm not going to pay for your lessons, and that's how that ended, and I just didn't touch that instrument for ages, and really, it was, I wanted to write songs, so my brother got a guitar, my dad gave him a guitar for one of his birthdays, and he bought me a bass guitar, but then I was like, wait, you can play chords on guitar, like you can write songs on this. So I got my brother to teach me the 3 chords that he knew at the time and just practiced them over and over and over and over and over. And I just started writing these songs with just 3 chords. And it was like an obsession. I just wanted to write and write and write and write. And then when I got to about, 17, 18, I found out about this place called LIPPA in Liverpool, which is Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, where you could go study basically popular music. I think one of my teacher's sons went there or something. And I was like, that's what I wanted. Like, I want to go there. I didn't even know you could do that. Like, I didn't know that was a thing that you could do a degree in. So I was like, all right, okay, I'm going to apply for this. This is where I'm going to go. I was set on it. I was like, that's where I'm going. Like, that's it. I don't want to go anywhere else. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write songs. But you have to audition on an instrument. And I was like, well, I'm not a singer because I've never had a singing lesson. I'm definitely not a guitarist. So all I've got is cello. So it kind of forced me to write songs on the cello because I was like, I need to audition. So I want to go in as a songwriter, but I need to audition on an instrument. So that's kind of how that happened. I wasn't writing on the cello at all, but I just was like, well, I have to, otherwise I won't get in. So that's how I started using it, kind of more like somewhere between a double bass and a guitar. And it was taking influence from, at the time, My biggest influence in the world was Alicia Keys. I just loved her. And that album, Diary of Alicia Keys, was the one that made me want to start writing songs. And seeing a woman, like, again, it's like she's mixed as well, and she's playing an instrument and she was singing. And I just thought, oh, I want to be like that. I could see, like, it felt like, oh, if she can do that, maybe I can as well. Maybe I can be like her. So that's kind of how that happened, how it came from me being like in a little baby orchestra with my cello, which, to be honest, I never really liked orchestra, but it definitely was good. Like, taught me to listen more as a musician, and it's just hearing harmonies and stuff. It's the stuff that you picked up subconsciously. That's the thing that's been most useful to me now. But that was the transition for me. It was like, basically, I had no option. I was like, I will not get into this university if I don't use the instrument that I've actually learned. So I'll have to just try and make it be this thing that I'm trying to do.
Can you remember your audition song?
Yeah, I do. It was a song called Love Drunk, which, I mean, I don't love it. Every when I play it, people seem to respond well to it. But because for me, I just remember, this was just a song that I wrote on the cello because I needed to write a song on the cello rather than it meaning really anything to me. But it got me in, so it did the job.
Oh, come on, you've got to give us a couple lines.
You want me to sing some of it?
Yeah.
All right. Now the situation's come and I've got a little love drunk, baby. Won't you come and save me? There you go.
Hey. Love it, love it, love it. Right, we're going to put some more music on. We're going to have your final selection, which is Bob Marley's Stir It Up. Why did you choose this selection?
Oh, this one's really, really special because this is Stir It Up, but it's redone with the Chinique Orchestra. And if you don't know who Chinique are, you've got to check them out because they're a black and minority ethnic group orchestra. Incredible players, and my sister plays with them. So this was recorded. I remember when she went to Abbey Road to record this with them. It was ages and ages and ages ago. And then I just noticed it come up on my YouTube, like, God, maybe last week. And I said, oh, it's out now. I listened through the whole album. And it was hard because I was thinking, oh, can I really put two Bob Marley songs in? I was like, yeah, of course I can. It's Bob Marley. Like, I think I'm allowed to do that. But this one is just so nice. It's such a nice arrangement with the strings. And it's just kind of, it feels special that people are still listening to this now. And that, can you imagine, like, what he would think if he could see this now? Just see, like, these musicians playing classical instruments. Like, something, this could have not happened, like, 30 years ago. It just wouldn't have happened. But now, we're in a time that, yeah, we can have these, like, world-class orchestra of black musicians in the UK. And they're playing on Bob Marley tracks. It's just really special. So I just had to put this in. And, yeah, so this is Chinique Orchestra with playing on Bob Marley. Stir It Up.
We're going to have a special big up for your sister. Come on, what's your sister's name?
She's called Elodie.
There you go. All right, here we go. We Stir It Up.
Baby,
Right, we want to get into your music now. So we have three of your own works that we're going to be listening to. But before we do, before we get into the first one of those works, can you tell our listeners more about your name? Tell us how it came to be. Is there a story behind your name?
There is indeed. So my name, Satin, is actually named after a Duke Ellington's song, which is Satin Doll. I think my dad said that he was trying to find names for ages. My mom was just like, no, I don't like it. It's fine. And then he said, what about Satin? And he played it on the piano to her, and she liked the track, so I think that helped as well. So, I'm named after a Duke Ellington track, which is nice. It's kind of nice full circle that I then came on to be a musician.
Definitely. Wow. We're going to go on to your first works that you have given to us, which is Goodnight Manhattan. Would you like to tell us a bit about this work?
Yeah, so this is a really early song that I wrote, but I still like it. It's actually one of my brother's favorite tracks that I've ever written. And I wrote it, I think I was 17, and we'd gone to New York. It's the first and only time I've been to New York. And Alicia Keys is from there. And so I just fell in love with the place. It was like what I'd been dreaming of. And you can hear in this as well that, because it was recorded quite a long time after, and she'd actually then released, what is it called? Empire State of Mind. And I actually added in a bit to like reference that, because I'm just such a big fangirl, basically. So this song is about me going over to New York when I was 17 and just falling in love with the city, basically.
Here we go with Satin Beige, Good Night Manhattan.
Times Square romanced me, entranced me, and Broadway just took my breath away. There are living
more about the process when you're writing a song. Do you use special tools? Does it all just come naturally? Can you write a song in 5 minutes, 5 months? What is it for you?
I think it changes from day to day. So sometimes it will be, I have just an idea in my head. It's normally like when I'm meant to be doing something else, washing up or reading or working or literally anything, and I'll just have like something. I'm like, oh, I need to stop what I'm doing now because I have to do this song, because it's usually something I don't want to be doing. Sometimes it's just I'm with an instrument and it just sort of just comes to me. Sometimes it's like in the middle of the night. A lot of the time I think I'm writing because it's something that I want to say, but I'm afraid to say it to the person that I want to say it to, so I just put it in a song, and it's kind of a way to hide behind like the melody and the lyrics. And then you can just go, oh, it's just a song, oh, it doesn't mean anything. So I just use writing and songs and music for a lot of different things. But sometimes it's just like playing, you know, you're just playing with chords, or you just have a little riff, you start writing, and then it kind of flows. And the way I always think of it is it's like the song's already there, but you've got to find it. So you're like trying to find the right pieces to fit together, or it's like cleaning a mirror off and then you can suddenly see like your reflection in it. That's how I feel a lot. Like the song is already there. I'm just trying to discover it.
With that in mind, could you give us a song that was really, really hard to write and really, really easy to write? And why do you think that was?
Okay, so I think the easiest songs are probably the ones that I don't really care about. So like if I'm just, I had a song which was a dream that I'd had, and the song wasn't in the dream, but it was just such a vivid dream. So I wanted to write a song about the dream. It was about this guy, like me waking up in an apartment and hearing this piano music and going through it and there being a man sitting at the piano. And it came so easy because it felt low stakes, so it didn't matter. I didn't really care about whether it was good or not, because it was just me trying to write down this dream that I had. But when I'm trying to write something because it's something I want to say to someone, but maybe I'm afraid to say it, it takes me longer, because it's like I'm really trying to say something from my heart. And maybe it's because I'm like, well, if they hear this, I want them to know what it is that I'm trying to say. I can't use any substitutes. It has to be exactly right. So it feels a little bit harder when I'm trying to do that.
And how would you say you've got round that barrier or that wall? Is there anything that you've managed to use to kind of break through?
Not really. Like sometimes it's just a case of leaving things and going back to them and just getting a bit of perspective. And I think what's helped me a lot is like knowing that I can change things, because sometimes I'd be like, oh no, I don't want to just put a temporary line here because that's not good enough, so I can't move on from this point until then. And I was just like, well, it's my song. Like if I want to change it in a year's time, I can. So I can put this line here and it just be a holding line, and then I can get on with the rest of the song. And I've done that with songs and played them for years, and then it's like always knowing that I wasn't quite satisfied with that song, but I just don't know what goes there. And then it will just be like one day I'm playing it, I'll be like, that's it. That's the right line. Sometimes it means the rest of the song has to change, but that's fine. But it makes it easier when I'm not like, it doesn't have to be perfect the first time and I can just let it go, or literally just be like, don't worry then, this song can be shelved for a month, 2 months, 3 months, however long, doesn't matter. Move on to the next one.
Before we hear another one of your works, can you tell us of your favourite performance so far and why it's your favourite?
Oh, that is so hard. I've actually got two, I think. One of them was this little gig in Liverpool. It was Smith Down Road Festival, which happens every year now, but it was the first year they did it. And they put me on in this little cafe, and it just, everyone really, really listened. And it's not the only time that's happened, but this felt different. It felt like magic. And they really wanted to hear what I had to say, and they were really engaged, you know, like I felt like they were with me. So that was really special. And then the other one is, again, in Liverpool, it's Africa Oye. I opened the music program for Africa Oye, which is the biggest like celebration of African music in Europe, I think, or at least it was back then, 2019. And it was incredible just to be on a massive big stage and have all these people there, and just, I had a band and it just felt good. And also it was Windrush Day then, and I had a song that I had dedicated to like the Windrush generation, and I could sing that, and it was just, oh, it was just amazing. It was a great memory. I will never forget that.
What was the song called?
That song is called, what is it called? To Be Free, it's called. He sent the rain, not to drown me, just to clean me, put me through pain, not to hurt me, just to teach me that this ain't a game. And forgive me if I'm preaching, but I learned love, truth, and mercy, to have mercy and to be free.
Oh yes, oh yes. Well, that leads us beautifully into your next works, which is called Neon Stars. Can you tell us all about this works and please introduce it?
Yeah, Neon Stars is it's a song about falling in love and kind of being a little bit reluctant to. And it was a time when I was hurting. I hadn't really healed from my last experience of falling in love. But it felt like it might be happening again. And I was kind of like, I don't want to do this again. Like, I don't want to go through this roller coaster. Or I just leave me alone kind of thing. But then for the other person who's on the other side of that, they kind of, if you're sending mixed messages, like not intentionally. So it was me trying to explain myself a little bit about what it felt like from my point of view and why I was behaving that way. So this is actually just something that I recorded. I think it was in the pandemic. I just set up a microphone, played my electric guitar, put the vocal down, put a few harmonies on, and then just put it out into the world. I didn't have big plans for it, but it's actually one of my favorite songs, I think, that I've ever written. It's Neon Stars.
Neon stars and shooting lights, pitch black sunset, pastel colored nights, a snowfall in July, a heat wave in December, wood right from the fire. I'm a monsoon's embers, neon sirens and flashing stars. You're the man from Venus, I'm a woman from Mars. I'd rather fight with you than have to face my feelings. Rather have your logic without all your reasons. Why? Because sometimes you make me cry, but I hate it more when you make me smile. Even though I told you stop, 'cause I can't, but I cannot, 'cause you're the one thing I can't drop. And I swear this is real love, that's why I'm neon stars and shooting lights, pitch black sunset, pastel color nights, the snowfall in July, a heat wave in December, wood rock from the fire. I'm a monsoon's embers, neon sirens and shooting stars. You're the man from Venus, I'm a woman from Mars. I'd rather fight with you than have to face my feelings. Rather have your logic without all your reasons. Why? Because sometimes it makes me cry, but I hate it more when you make me smile. Even though I told you stop, because I can't, but I can't not. Yeah, you're the one thing I can't drop. And I swear this is real love, that's why that's why I seem like a constant contradiction. That's why I caught up in all this indecision. Because I can't, but I cannot. Well, you're the one thing I can't drop. That's why.
Now, I'm going to go with a couple of questions where five is a magic number. So If you could perform on any five stages anywhere in the world, where would they be and why?
You know, I was going to say Royal Albert Hall, but I'm always not sure about the sound in there. But I think I still would pick it anyway because it's such an iconic venue. So that would be London. I would play in Madison Square Gardens. I would play... See, I really want to go to South America. I don't know what their venues are, but I would love to play in Buenos Aires. So whatever the biggest biggest venue is there.
Why in particular there?
Why there? Because I know they've got a banging music scene there. I would see, if it was up to me, I would tour South America. I've never been there, but I just love all the music from there, and I think they would get what I do. I just think it would be a good time. So I would love to go there. But I feel like, yeah, Buenos Aires is probably a good place to start. And then I would play, trying to think. I'd play in Dublin, but I can't think what the venue would be. I'm not sure. But somewhere in Dublin with a nice big stage.
And why Dublin? Why Dublin?
Because I'm just obsessed with Dublin at the moment. I love it there. I'm just there all the time that I can be. I'm there. I love it. They're just really like, they've got such a strong like storytelling and music tradition. And you can just feel it when you're in the city. It's so exciting to be there as any kind of creative person. So I would love to be able to play there, like somewhere with a really nice sound system. Get a nice bassy bottom end on the cello and just play a full set would be amazing. So I got one more, haven't I? Let me yes. think. I think, and I can't remember the name of this place now, but it's in, I went to Amsterdam and they have this kind of like they call it a jazz club. I don't think they just do jazz. And I can't remember for the life of me what it's called now. But I saw a really great kind of like Latin jazz band from Aruba in there. And it was a great little venue. And yeah, I'd play there as well.
Okay, so we're going to go with the other five question, which is if you could collaborate with any five artists, who would they be and why?
Oh, tricky. Okay, let me think about this one. Obviously, I'm going to say Alicia Keys because she's just been such an inspiration to me. I keep thinking about people that I'm not alive anymore, which is not helpful. let me think. I think Nabaya Garcia, whose track you played earlier, I would love to collaborate with her just because I just would just love to know how her mind works. Esperanza Spalding, who's like a double bass player singer, incredible musician. I would love to collaborate with her. Who else? Oh, there's this band. They're called Phony People. I'm obsessed with them. Would love to collaborate with them. And then finally, Tank and the Bangers, who one of my friends is supporting them, and I'm so jealous. So they are incredible New Orleans band, incredible singers, incredible musicians. Yeah, I'd love to do anything with them, even just play like three notes on one of their tracks. I think those would be my top five.
So before we hear your final works, can you tell us, when all of your works are complete, what are the three things that you feel that you must have completed to accomplish your mission in this world, which will stand as your legacy?
The three things. Wow, that's a good question. I think, for me, I hope that I can put a bit more kindness and empathy into the world. I don't know if that will be through my music necessarily, but just from hopefully the way that I live my life and the way that I treat my friends and just the people around me, I hope that it will mean that people are encouraged to be kinder and more empathetic, because I think we really could use that at the moment. I always hope that maybe there's some other little kid that looks maybe like me, or not like me, maybe, who watches what I'm doing and wants to pick up an instrument. Or maybe they want to put down their violin or their cello because they're like, oh, this isn't cool, I don't want to play classical music. But then they see what I'm doing, they're like, actually, I can use this as a tool to make something that I want to make. You don't have to be confined to just playing Bach or Mozart or whatever else. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, like, that's fine as well. But I just know for some people, it can feel quite constraining. For me, because there's all these kind of rules and conventions, and I just wanted to make something. I wanted to express myself, and that wasn't a way that I could do that. And I love classical music. I love listening to my sister play, but it's just not me. So I hope that the same way that like Chinakay are doing something to show that you can be Black and play classical music. You can be Black and be the best classical musician in the world. That's completely possible. So if you want to do that, go for it. But equally, if you want to play a cello and do jazz or pop or rock or funk or reggae or whatever, you can. It's just an instrument. You can use it however you want. And then the last thing is I would like to educate. So I didn't know that I wanted to do that until I just kind of by default started teaching. But just to see the way that it doesn't have to be like maths and English, but just for people to know that they can learn, they can be more than they think is possible, that don't let anyone tell you what you can and can't do. You'll be amazed, like the incredible things that you can do, the incredible things that humans can do. And like, don't internalize when people are telling you can't do things. And it's so easy. We all do it. I do it sometimes, because you will tell yourself, I can't do that. But when you just try, if you just try and be a bit persistent and just be okay with failing, you can do incredible things. And I would like, I hope that like all of my students that I've ever had, that that's something they learned, that they learned that they're worth more than they thought they were. They are more capable than they thought they are. And to carry that forward for just through life, don't ever think that you're not valuable. Don't ever think you're not capable, because you are. Like, you might not be able to do it the way everyone else can do it, but you can do it. There'll be a way.
So I'm sure after hearing your works, all of our listeners will want to get in touch, want to show their support, want to purchase your works, and of course, come and see you live. So can you tell our listeners where they can find you, please?
Of course, yeah. Come and follow me. I'm Miss Satin Beige, and that's on Facebook, that's on Instagram. And if you put that in with a .com at the end, that's my website as well. I am playing in London, and I'm playing in Wirksworth, which is somewhere up near the Lakes District. I'm playing in my hometown of Chelmsford, and I'm booking in more dates. So if you want like something a little bit different, because I play cello and sing, and you want to book me, then please get in touch. Or if you want to come and watch me play, if you want to give me a follow, if you want to drop me an email, just like get in touch, ask anything. I'm more than happy. I love talking to people. So please do be in touch if you want to be.
The final of your works that we're going to hear is called Being Me. Can you tell us all about these works, please?
Yeah, so Being Me. This track, I wrote it because people always asking me what my heritage was. So I figured if I put it in a song, they wouldn't have to ask me anymore. I could just be like, hey, you can find out if you follow me on Spotify. So this was a song I actually started writing it at a train station. And I wanted my brother, my little brother, he's 6'5", much taller than me, but little baby brother, we'll still call him. I wanted him to do a rap on it. And he basically said, write it yourself. So I did, but I can't rap. So I ended up singing it about this conversation that I'd had with a South American woman who thought I was South American and seemed to be offended that I couldn't speak Portuguese or Spanish or one of those languages. And I was just too in shock to tell her, like, but I'm not South American. So I wrote it into the song. And just kind of put it in one place about all of my heritage, and that's Being Me.
So we are going to play out with Being Me by Satin Beige. But firstly, I would like to thank you so, so much for sharing your heritage, your life story, and your selections, and of course, your musical works with all of us.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. Please make sure to connect, support, promote this week's artist, as with all of the artists featured throughout the summer. Yeah, promote these works. You need to uplift our brothers and sisters in these beautiful works that they are doing. All of the links are in the descriptions for everybody that is featured in each episode. So if you feel that you've got a connect to help uplift them, or you'd like to feature them within your own works, please, please do get in touch with them. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Reggae Uprising Podcast wherever you are listening to it. Alternatively, you can subscribe via my website, daniel.co.uk, which is daniel.co.uk. I hope you have a wonderful week. Please make sure you're back here next Wednesday for a fresh and new episode. Until then, as always, blessed love.
I'm alright, just living the life I live, undefined. Though they be judging me by my skin, but I'm not African, Indian, Mexican, Brazilian, Spanish, or Portuguese. But I'm alright, hey. Trust me in me. Brazilian Ciara walking down the street stopped me at the crossroads and said to me, hola señorita, tu habla pachega. So I said, no, I shook my head. She said, you should have more pride in your heritage, but I'm the Caribbean type, a South American, a furthermore, I'm equally Jewish, a Asian, equally black and Caucasian. Geographically, I guess I'm Eurasian. Getting to the point, I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not offended, so don't think I'm upset. It's just that what you think you see isn't always what you get. And I'm alright, I'm alright, just being me. Hey, I'm alright. Portuguese, but I'm alright.
though it's true that black and white's just too simplistic. There's a whole lot more that's missing, and I'm alright, just being me. I'm alright. Boxes, but they can't really box me. I keep taking mixed other, undefined by color, and I'll never be in that's alright.
I'm alright, just living a life I live.